Hi, welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Freich. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I've met with and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, and fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights and expertise, and in this case today, passion, to help businesses all around the world become gooder. I'm really excited to introduce today's guest, Jane Pinto. Pinto Farms is kind of like, that's the holding brand, right? Or the holding
Pinto
company?
Pinto Barn.
Pinto Barn. Oh, okay. Thank you for that. Pinto Barn. Jane is, for those of you that don't know, and that I got to learn about recently, is a lifelong visionary in the naturals and wellness space, building cultures of love and care, companies with strong missions that are devoted to healing and elevating people in the planet. And she's really spent her entire career helping corporations and small business even create workplaces that honor unconditional equality. Jane, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really honored. It's very important. Thank you.
Oh, well, I learned about you kind of through my LinkedIn network. I had made a request on LinkedIn asking people out in the big planet who they wanted to hear from on this podcast that I started. And Leslie Savino of Nestle Water specifically made a request to hear from you. She had learned about you in a previous career life of hers. And she asked me to, well, she asked to hear from you. So thank you for being open to that request. And we can thank Miss Leslie for that opportunity as well.
Yeah, that was really touching. I so appreciated it. Thank you.
Yeah. And are you in Colorado today or are you in New Mexico? Tell me, where are you on this planet?
I am in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I live now. Yes, where the new company First Crop is headquartered.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm interested in learning about that in a little bit. But you have a kind of an interesting history. You know, the naturals industry has changed so much in the past few years. So I want to start with what I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, is kind of your entry into this better for you industry. You have an interesting story that I'd love for you to share in this. How did you get here? Kind of through this Don't Go Nuts brand. And since how did you get here and Don't Go Nuts are so intertwined, maybe you could talk a little bit about that genesis.
Sure. Well, I always was trying to create mission-based companies. And the first one that I had created was called Pinion Real Estate Group. And we really brought forward loud and clear message that transactions were not relationships and sales were not, were not about your values. And so we really worked on a culture of love and care in a real estate firm and talked about the spirit of the sale. And it really changed things. It's a beautiful company that still today in Salida, Colorado. But while I was there, I had twins. And my little girl at three had anaphylaxis. And of course, then you go on this journey. And we had no idea what we were doing. We didn't know anything about anaphylaxis, peanut, tree nut, mango, allergies. And we didn't know what food to feed her. And being visionary and entrepreneurial, it's just something I can't help. I was born that way. And I don't apologize for it anymore. I'm really grateful. Everybody has their gifts. And this one is my gift and blessing. And immediately, we just started thinking about what could we do? These kids and families, these communities of care for these children need to feel safe. They need to feel like they have what they require, not only to feed the body but to feed the soul. It's such an emotional thing for these children. They're worried about their life. Food becomes something that is not fun and not trustworthy. So we started, and Lily, my daughter, and my son Gray, they helped every step of the way, and my husband Doug. And it was a family business, and it became a family community business. Everyone in Salida got behind it. and angels everywhere. And we created our own facility because we didn't trust making the food somewhere else. And those foods are delicious, organic, and sold today still.
Well, that's really interesting. Our firm worked with Hillary's Eat Well a few years ago. I don't know if you know Hillary Brown. She had a very similar experience and right around that same time. And this food allergy concept, and I'm calling it a concept, it's not really a concept. They've been around forever, but it seemed to kind of accelerate around this time, or at least the acknowledgement of it started to accelerate right around the same time with you. And it was maybe not quite a novel concept, but still new. What sort of issues were you coming up against, either in the industry or I guess probably in the industry, because it sounds like your immediate community kind of got it and galvanized and surrounded you and helped you move forward. But were you running into anything in the industry, whether it was the concept or where, you know, that you were coming from Colorado, because at the time Colorado was not the epicenter of naturals as it is now, just anything.
I think the thing that we faced most was, where are we going to make it? And we realized we have to make it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so building that facility was quite an undertaking, because you're not only building a brand, you're also running a manufacturing facility, which I think was the biggest hurdle and, of course, took the most resources.
Sure.
Then you get a great product, and you're trying to go into a marketplace and a category that really, Freeform really wasn't even known then. I mean, Enjoy Life really blazed saddles for all of us.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful. Really grateful to that brand, but people really didn't understand the category. There was a lot of education. There was a lot of poo-pooing, you know, like, oh, come on, it's not that big a deal. Yeah. So the education around this really was about life and death, and providing this for our consumers was our responsibility as not only retailers, but as brand builders. And that conversation took flight, and people started to really respect that Freeform was a real thing, and people needed gluten-free, and they needed nut-free, and they needed the things they needed for nourishment, but for life force.
Yeah. It's a kind of a tricky combination, right? Because you're developing a product for a legitimate need, and yet you need to talk about it in a way that isn't scary or medicinal. Right? Because you are, as you said earlier, this is like people are now distrusting their food source. The relationship with food isn't casual like it is for people who don't have these issues. How did you find what were the tricky components, or maybe it was easier than what I'm thinking, but what were the components around being able to share what was going on and not make it be this life and death thing that it really is, but something that was attractive to people because do you know what I mean? Like you get more flies with honey than, you know, so yeah. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think that was where the love and care culture came from. Not only do we want to work in that love and care culture together, but we wanted to be love and care for all of the people we were educating and talking to, the mothers who didn't like the fact that they couldn't have a peanut butter sandwich anymore. I kept talking about, and so did everyone at Don't Go Nuts, that we have to handle this with love and care to be heard, to be seen, and to have this really be something that other people care about. And if you go at them with anger or, you know, anything justified or defensive, people run. They run. And so that's really where love and care was born. Not only are we making it with love and care, but we're expressing it with love and care.
I wonder if anecdotally, just simply because the Gooder podcast is about women leadership, did you see acceptance and adoption happen faster with women because they were typically the caretakers of the family, or did you find the adoption to be a little bit more equal, or do you easy to remember that?
No, I remember very clearly on the consumer level, the online level, both mothers and fathers were so grateful for the product. It's a terrifying thing.
Yeah.
And so it's really wonderful when you feel heard and cared for and provided for. But the buyers, for sure, there was a faster and just a more natural, nurturing understanding from female buyers right off the bat. And I have to say that the men really came along quickly, and some of our greatest champions along the way have been men. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I know that, you know, there's like an equilibrium, you know, men and women, like our world works best when we work together because we have our strengths and our weaknesses. So I'm always interested to see where that adoption starts and then who becomes kind of the champions of the initiative. So thank you for that. So here you are, in addition to starting this new company and building a manufacturing facility, you're transitioning industries, you know, real estate to CPG or different beasts. Did you find anything in your real estate experience that helped you kind of adopt or transform easily or kind of just feel more comfortable in CPG? Were there any traction there?
Well, I think the most important traction is I've just always believed we have to be exactly who we are. And that if I bring that with me, if I go and I'm just Jane and I do exactly what I do and I'm honest and I'm truthful and I say when I don't know and I say when I'm scared and I feel confident when I really am. And those things have always been, I feel, what has guided the path for me in any industry.
Sure.
Just being who I am and being willing to learn. I had so much to learn and ask for help. And there's so many people who help. And then you get to help others, and that's just awesome. So
that's great. Then since, of course, you know, we're jumping through swaths of time here, but since then, you've now started First Crop. It's a mission-based CBD wellness brand. And when I was first doing research on you, I thought to myself, well, this feels a little bit more like an ecosystem where the brand wants to take care of the farmers and the land and consumers. But it feels consistent with your previous efforts. So all of your businesses are kind of an ecosystem. This one just feels a little bit bigger because we're taking on, I feel like, bigger and multiple initiatives, not just more singular initiatives. So instead of just allergy foods, now we're talking about responsible farming and taking care of the little guy. And tell us a little bit about that history and my understanding what you're trying to do with that brand.
No, that was really great. As you know, we go along in our careers and at each stop we learn something and then we take it with us. And the next thing we do, hopefully we do better. And I think that what is so exciting about First Crop is that it really is from the soil all the way to the soul, all the way to the shelf, and then back to the farmer. It's a regenerative system in its corporate model. And so I feel great about that, but I also feel great about the fact that our mission is healing people and planet one seed, one soul, one regenerative act at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, and I'm sure you would agree with this, that it's going to take one small regenerative act at a time for all of us to really, really save what we have, regenerate what we have, be respectful of what we have, and heal ourselves and the planet along the way. And First Crop is really about that because CBD is an amazing healer. And hemp is an amazing healer and miracle for planet. You know, just in its natural state, how it grows and what the taproot does to the soil and how it grabs carbon out of the air and puts it back in the soil. It's just absolutely amazing. I had no idea.
Does it function? Curiously, I learned about sunflowers and sunflowers' ability to clean soil. Do they function kind of the same way? Or are they
completely? Well, I think that, no, I think that those big taproots like hemp has and like a sunflower has, they literally go down and they get into the soil in a whole bunch of different tentacles and they do their work. I mean, they are really, honestly, they're healers.
That's super fascinating. Yeah. I only asked that about sunflowers because I was watching something like Sunday Morning. That's my secret weekend thing that I like to do. And they were talking about the fact that sunflowers are being used in Japan to soak up all the radiation from the ground that spilled during the tsunami. Yep. And I thought to myself, how on earth can a plant do that? So when I'm hearing about hemp, it's like, oh, there's a type, it must be a type of plant that can be regenerative. That's super exciting.
Yeah, hemp was used at Chernobyl to remediate the soil. It's fascascinating. And CBS Sunday Morning is where First Crop came from.
Oh, you're
many,
kidding.
Many years ago, Jason Brown was on it. He had left the NFL. He had left a huge contract. He was telling the story about becoming a farmer.
Yes,
it touched
okay.
me so. He touched me so much, and he said, I'm going to give my first crop every year to my community because it's the most nutritious and healing crop of the year. And I got out my visionary pad, wrote down first crop and started working on it at that moment alongside of Don't Go Nuts.
That is so nuts because I remember that exact episode, and I was thinking to myself, what an amazing story. How small world was that moment right there? That's crazy.
I know, I had to tell you because I just love that. Yeah. So, great.
Wow. So, the real reason I reach out to anybody to participate in the podcast or those that come reach out to me is I love to meet people. I love these stories. I think the more of these stories that we can share, particularly for our industry, the better we can become as an industry. And when you and I first connected, this great conversation about women in business, just in general. And I had made some kind of pretty general observations that women predominantly start businesses because they see a need within their family or their community or the world. And that is, of course, your story. And we talked about a number of things. You had so much to say about a woman's role in business economics. In fact, you used a term, sacred economics, that I'd not heard before. Can you talk about that a little bit? What do you define as sacred economics? What is it that we can learn from that term and the philosophy?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's one of the most important things to me in my heart. Sacred economy, sacred economics is, and this is as far as I'm concerned, I mean, this is something I've been working on my entire career and I'm getting ready to bring forward. It's that belief that there's enough, that we can create beautiful companies, they can be profitable, but that we don't have to grab every single last bit of the profits. We can bring forward in service and in mission a lot of the profits so that if everybody was giving more of their profits, that ripple effect would be absolutely amazing. And that's how I feel an economy is sacred, is when we're really in purpose, in service, and we understand that there's enough. There's enough for the investors, for the team members, for the consumer, and then there's enough for service to do good.
That's, I'm trying to not choke on that, and that, like, trying to keep my emotions on that. It is really a place that I come from, and I really haven't met a whole lot of people that feel that way. And it's hard when you work in an industry, the goal end of the day as an agency, when I'm working on putting on my agency hat, and my business partner and I are talking to people, is the goal is to make more mm-hmm. so somebody can have more. And sometimes when the missions of the companies kind of crash against that. And this idea of there is enough, I think, is outside of our industry, is something that I think that we could all embrace a little bit more. We don't need to hoard. There's no need to overproduce food. I spoke with a woman recently named Janet Lee, who was working at PepsiCo, and an initiative to reduce the amount of overproduction food that is grown, and the resources used for food that is grown that is never going to be consumed. and to start moving away from that. So when I hear somebody like Jane Pinto's philosophy of sacred economy being used, the language is differently in the major CPGs, but when I see that, I'm like, I have a lot of hope for mm-hmm. how things are changing. That's a really great thing. I love that. Sacred economies or sacred economics. I love that. And I'm going to borrow it and attribute it to you, of course, but I'm going to use that in my vocabulary now. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Now, of course, since 2012, natural and better for you brands have exploded. They've mainstreamed. We have a lot of these multinationals stepping into it, mostly because of opportunity. And my agency has certainly seen the shifts. You know, we started working in the industry when it was brands that were just founder owners and were trying to do something more than just make money. And we've seen this shift from missions creating products to brands creating missions almost simply for marketing sake. And sometimes I feel like the authenticity of a brand is a soundbite rather than act of caring or love. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, that it's just simply that the naturals category has evolved. I wonder what's your take on this transformation? Do you have a POV? Are you feeling that because it's bigger, that it's better at the end of the day, or are you finding there are some things that you wish weren't happening?
Well, you know, I think everything matters. So if somebody is doing good, but they're actually really doing it, and somewhere along the way, somebody who's touching it really believes that it's doing good, because if a founder just starts something, and this is what we're going to use to do good, it won't ever work.
Right.
It won't ever work. And so somewhere along the way, somebody's doing the good. And if the good is actually happening, you know, this is the Gooder podcast, then I'm all for it. I mean, we're going to know who's real and truthful about what they're doing. You hear it in a minute. You hear it in the first sentence they say.
Yeah.
So I think consumers today are the ones who really judge that. And I think they look and they read and they see and they figure out if you say you are about the environment and you're using plastic and everything, they get it very quickly that that's not matching up.
Yeah.
And I think the consumer actually is the one who bears truth. And I think they really know who comes to, to feed the soil rather than to take the fruit.
Sure. As you know, we've looked back a little bit, but as you look into the future of the industry, what is it? And I already feel like I know what you're going to say, but what do you feel is important for us to keep in mind? You know, you've gone through one iteration of change in the naturals industry. I'm kind of looking for like, what sort of advice would you give those that are maybe just coming up into the workforce, or even those that have been in the category for a while? You know, what's the advice that you would give to a brand that really wants to make a difference?
Well, I think we have to look at our global family, and we have to look at the condition of Mother Earth. And I feel like the earth is sacred. I do. And if we look at that, then there's so many needs. If we even just take one of them and focus on that, and that's our place where we give back and our place where we serve, so much will happen. Mm. It just has to be real and passionate, and it has to be fierce.
The realness is, I feel like the realness is kind of crashing around us right now. I think there's so many different fronts that everybody's, you know, as a consumer, it's they want to find those safe brands that are doing the heavy lifting for them, so that by association they feel like they can do good when everything else feels out of control in their immediate environment.
Mm-hmm. There's so much that is, I mean, nothing is certain right now, but what is certain is what we do and how we treat people. Yeah. And so I think we should buy brands that care, and I think we should investigate them, and I think we should know that what we're buying really is making a difference, is doing something for someone somewhere that is changing everything, because every little change is collective and it makes big change. So, and I think we have to demand personally, we have to be bold and demand that all of our leaders are heart leaders today. Yeah. Not just effective strategy,
right,
and execution leaders, but and financial leaders, but they are heart leaders. I think we have to demand that. Male, female, child, everyone.
Yeah. Love it. I wonder, when you look back at your, when you look back at just kind of the two brands, the two most recent brands, and we can, of course, I feel weird wanting to separate it because I understand that you see them all as so closely related because of how you built them. When you look back on your brands, is there one learning that you, or one learning that you would want to share with us that you think, I wished I would have learned that sooner. I wished I would have learned that earlier.
You know, I thought about that. I've been asked that before. And for me, I think knowing who you are working with, really knowing them, people are like, people laugh when they, a bunch of times I've been in meetings and somebody's gone and put their education at the highest level. And
oh, yeah,
they are absolutely fantastically brilliant in their mind.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for heart and mind brilliance. And I hire hearts. I do. And I just do. And people laugh and they've teased me about it. But I've often hired really big roles, not even exactly knowing where they came from as far as education. Because for me, I want to know what you care about and who you care about and how you do what you do to make sure that the world knows that that's true. And I think what I've learned is sometimes I got it wrong, and that's okay, that I believed in people that sometimes disappointed. And at first that felt really personal and heartbreaking. Now it just feels like you love them in the door and you love them out the door.
And I love that.
And you know, I try not to get into right and wrong and good decision, bad decision. I just try to keep open and keep leading from a place of that everything matters, and everything we do matters, and everything we say matters, and every decision we make in a company matters, because it all affects someone.
Yeah.
And so that's what we hold at the company. That's what a culture of love and care is that every decision matters. Dave Ware, he's the CEO of First Crop, and he is the most beautiful right-left brain leader, mm-hmm, and full-hearted leader. And I'm, you know, there are just beautiful men like that. We have to work with them, and we have to work together.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, this idea of I wrote down getting it wrong is okay. That's not exactly what came out of your mouth. That's kind of what I'm hearing, is like getting it wrong is okay. It really is about the intention. And if you're coming at whatever it is that you're doing, it could be making dinner for a family, you know, it doesn't have to be from business. But I think if we gave ourselves, and I find this true for myself, but getting it right is always like on the top of mind, because I feel like there's constantly this desire to prove that I'm not going to get it wrong. And it's probably because I'm a child of the 80s, but that's another story, probably over a beer. But this idea of intentionality and okay to be wrong, and then being able to forgive yourself and then ask for forgiveness, I feel like that's all kind of looped together. And I don't necessarily think that's a natural way of doing business. Like if you make an error, to be able to go to somebody and go, I screwed that up. And to have that person, mm-hmm, say, thanks for acknowledging that. It's okay. You know,
right,
instead of it being like, you know, getting mad and making people wrong. I don't think that helps I don't think it helps a business culture. I don't think it helps a business ecosystem. And sometimes, frankly, getting something wrong or not getting it perfect, there's more learnings and more value there than it is getting it right.
Without a doubt. I mean, look at our own lives when we fall down and hopefully we fall forward. And then we get back up. And in a culture that we call a culture of love and care, then there's times when you have to say what you mean, just don't say it mean. And
yes,
and we have to have courageous communication. And I have to say, hey, I'm really sorry to have to sit with you and say this, but I have to tell you because you're valuable to me and I'm valuable to me and the company's valuable to me. And so we have a lot of training on how do we have these conversations and how it's not about you're not. One person said to me once, culture of love and care, does that mean when someone does something wrong, you know, you just love them? Yes, that's exactly right. We do love them, but we also tell them that they didn't do it right.
Right.
But we say it in a way that is, you know, it's respectful. It values the person, values the mistake, asks them to take responsibility. You get into a conversation of how do we all need it to be better? And then you make agreements on that going forward. But if you think about marriage or kids or friendships, you got to do that everywhere. So I would say how we do anything is how we do everything.
Yeah, I like that a lot. How we do anything. Well, I wonder, I know, I don't know if there's anything specific that I haven't asked you that you were hoping to be able to share with me or with us today. So give you that kind of opportunity right now. Have we covered kind of those things that you're like, yes, this is what I want to share with people, or is there something else?
Thank you. Thank you for doing this podcast. Thank you for the heart behind it. Thank you a lot. I mean that. But I think it's just a time to be super bold, and we have to just talk about that there has to be love at work. There has to be the conversation about love at work, because if we don't have it there where we spend all our hours, it's very difficult to bring it out into the world because we're exhausted. So I just think it's new time, new conditioning. We've got to, you know, there's so much anger and there's so much harm being done in the world. It's our responsibility to be regenerative, to be reciprocal. Go back to reciprocity, like the old history showed. If you took something from the land, you put something back in. That wasn't me doing that, but I'm so grateful people started doing that, and we need to do it again.
Yeah.
And it's just the same thing with how we treat each other. You give me something, I need to give you something, and we just need to get back to a more loving way.
I'm not frequently gobsmacked. I'm mostly a babbler, but I'm hearing a lot of things that make me want to just take time to sit with it. And I know I'll have an opportunity to do that later. Thank you.
You're so welcome. And people need to buy brands that care.
Yeah.
But, you know, support the brands that are truly walking this talk and doing it, because it's expensive to do it this way. Mm-hmm. And so many great, great, great hearted brands don't make it because they don't get supported. We need to support our good companies. That's the last thing I'll say. And thank you.
Oh my goodness. No, the problem. I wonder, you know, you have such a fun experience with the brands, and then also your relationship with business and community and land. I wonder if you might have kind of some sort of, I'm going to use the word fun, nugget that you like to share with people that have them go, oh my gosh, like for me, it was like the sunflower, or maybe it was just earlier that how regenerative hemp is to the soil. But is there maybe another point that you sometimes like to go, well, did you know? And it's just a simple soundbite that people can take and easily share. over a cocktail or a coffee. Hey, I listened to Jane. She said this one thing.
You know, I think the miracle of hemp is not only does it wake up our own cannabinoid system that lays dormant without it reacting with the things that come through CBD, so it is so healing. But when we look, I read this, and it was from a good source, that in 90 days, it takes for hemp to, from soil, seed, to harvest, that's 90 days. We sequester as much carbon as it would take 20 years to mature trees and in a small part of the forest. I mean, so every 90-day period where we're harvesting hemp, we are sequestering enormous amounts of carbon. Wow. And I think if we can all think about that and then go buy CBD, go buy hemp products, not just because I'm from First Crop, buy all the hemp products out there, because you are doing a regenerative act by doing it. So maybe that's not the funnest thing over a drink, but maybe put a little CBD in the drink and we'll all have fun.
All right. Well, if maybe some people will talk about this over an edible or something, who knows, then we can.
Exactly.
That'll be interesting. That I love hearing that. So just, I shared this with somebody else just recently too, but my first experience with kind of this better for you industry actually started in 1999 when I worked on a project with Jane Goodall, and it was my team. It wasn't me. I was part of a team, and she had asked me to find paper that was ethically sourced, environmentally sound, didn't hurt people or the environment, etc. And in 1999, the internet was not possible. And so here this little tiny woman gave me marching orders, and I learned so much about the damage of manufacturing through my research, just trying to find a product that met her standards. That's where my battle cry started from, is like getting into recycled paper and ethical manufacturing. So I know that it just takes that one interaction with another Jane, right? Jane Goodall, Jane Pinto, whoever it is, that can kind of get you to understand that that it is, every single choice has a wave, has an impact. And so it's fun for me to have this conversation with you and just kind of reignite that spirit of love, planet love. I'm not quite sure exactly how to articulate that. Thank you so much for your time. Before we end the conversation, if people wanted to connect with you directly, what's the best way? Do you prefer LinkedIn or how else? What other method would you prefer?
Sure. LinkedIn is fine. My First Crop email is fine. jpinto@firstcrop.com. Happy to speak to anyone. I've always believed deeply that believing is what gets us there. And I am here if anybody wants to talk and wants, you know, and I love Jane Goodall. Me and you, we got some stuff.
We do, right? We need a drink, I think. What's this about?
She to me, you asked how Rand can truly be authentic. If you look at her life, it has been lived in such truth and passion and service that's what a brand needs to be if they want to be real. She's real. She is real.
She is the real deal.
And so inspiring.
A woman on a mission like this, she was just this little ball of fire, and there was no chit chat because she had a mission, and she was not going to be derailed from that. And not everybody can be a Jane Goodall, but you can take lead from her, take one idea from her, take one idea from a Jane Pinto, or one idea from an insert whomever, and run with it. And I think that's where a consumer can get overwhelmed, is thinking that they have to do everything. It's just choose one thing. If that's all you can do is one thing, that's one more than you were doing yesterday. And
that's one regenerative act at a time.
There you go. Yep. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, just a quick thank you again to Leslie Sabino of Nestle Waters for recommending you to come on here.
Thank you, Leslie.
Yeah, I love the connection, and I encourage these sorts of requests. So if anybody else has an idea of somebody that they would love to hear from or that we should all hear about, I want to know about it. So send a note to me via LinkedIn. And Jane, thank you so much for your time today and for the work that you are doing out in the world, not just through your brands, but just you as a human being is pretty fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.